Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Arnold Tucker was a pharmacist in a retail pharmacy when his vision began to fade, and that made it more difficult for him to do his job.
However, after obtaining some additional training, he found new doors open in his field. We'll speak with him about his journey and about opportunities available for blind pharmacists. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Arnold Tucker.
You just got to keep pressing and convince people that, you know, you haven't lost anything when you've lost vision. You've still got a brain and you still got a will to accomplish impossible.
If there were a young person with limited vision who asked you for advice about becoming a pharmacist, what would you say to that person?
I'd say go for it if you have the will. The study itself, you know, to get some kind of a degree in pharmacy, if you have enough vision to get through that, opportunities really open up for you. It's quite an intense program. In fact, when I finally made the decision to go on to school, I applied to Department of Rehabilitation at that time that paid my tuition at the university, which was $75 a semester back then compared to what they charge now. And they paid for my books for the first couple of years. But when I said I'm going to take pharmacy, they at first turned me down. And they said, no, that's too difficult for someone with your vision problems. Well, I sat down and wrote the letter of my life. It was more of an essay telling them, when I get into pharmacy, I'll be doing more reference work and not long reading, but just knowing where to go and find the information that I need. And finally, with all of that, I convinced them to go ahead and let me enroll as a pharmacist.
I always think that's kind of amazing when the rehab institutions are being discouraging about what a visually impaired person can and cannot do, instead of relying on the person themselves and how persistent and proactive they are to determine what may or may not happen.
Yes.
But it's just one more example of when somebody tells you no, that doesn't have to be the end of the conversation.
That's right. And I actually, we had another visually impaired person from Park Falls that kind of used me as a role model. And he had no trouble getting through the pharmacy school. What he did have trouble was getting through the examining boards.
Mm-hmm.
Because they says, well, if you're going to work as a pharmacist, then you have to be able to perform all the duties of dispensing in a pharmacy. Well, he's gotten other jobs. I don't know where he is now, but he never did work as a dispensing pharmacy in a retail pharmacy. I think he worked somehow in institutional pharmacy.
So it's interesting. They were asking him to be able to perform jobs that he'd never actually perform as a practicing pharmacist.
Yes.
Incredible.
Let's start by meeting Arnold Tucker.
My name is Arnold Tucker. I grew up in a little old town in northern Wisconsin called Winter. There was only a community of about 300 people. My father and mother owned a small drugstore in that town.
So it sounds like you've had visual problems since you were very young. What was the cause of that?
The cause of it was congenital glaucoma. I was diagnosed at 11 months old. My parents took me to a number of places, including Rochester, Minnesota, Michigan, and I came back to Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Those people said to save me a lot of pain, it would be better if they had both eyes removed, but they wouldn't give up. And they came back to Eau Claire and found a doctor by the name of Dr. Cook, who said, "We'll try something." And they performed tree vine operations with drilling a hole in the eyes. And with those, they were able to save one eye. I had another operation on the right eye later on, but it still didn't work. And I finally had that right eye removed when I was in the seventh grade.
And how much vision were you left with in your one remaining good eye?
Actually, it was quite good, maybe 20/30 vision, and I could read regular print very well.
Did you go to a school for the blind, or were you mainstreamed as a youth?
I started public school and went through the first and second grade. And because of my eye situation, people recommended that I attend the school for the blind in Janesville, Wisconsin. And I did that. I attended school there, the third, fourth grade, and things were going well. And then I didn't read Braille well. They wouldn't let us use, you know, regular print at that time. We had to do it in Braille. And when I got into the fifth grade, I ran into a problem because they started printing the Braille on both sides of the sheets and the textbooks and so forth. And I started falling behind, I thought, and I put up a fuss, and finally they let me go back home and attend a public school, where I graduated in a class of 25.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is being a blind practicing pharmacist.
Well, maybe you can tell us how you got into being a pharmacist in the first place.
I didn't know what I wanted to go into. My sister talked me into, "You start out in pharmacy anyway," she said, "if you don't like it, you can always change." So I enrolled at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. I did quite well until about the third year of my pharmacy education. I started having more eye problems. Pressure was coming up, and they were treating me, the doctors there in Madison, with different medications. And finally, I received my degree in pharmacy and did some of my internship at the University Hospital and in a couple little pharmacies up north. And I worked in a small pharmacy of only 1,000 square feet in Park Falls, Wisconsin. And that pharmacist was ready to retire. And my dad worked as a pharmacist, so my dad helped me purchase that little pharmacy that I went to work with up in Park Falls, and that's where I started my practice pharmacy at Tucker's Drugstore at that time.
Can you describe what the training to become a pharmacist entails? What kind of courses, you said you did like an internship or apprenticeship?
Basically, it was chemistry, physics, physiology, and we took courses in dispensing as well to actually prepare a lot of the drugs that we did.
Now, I take it in order to become a pharmacist, you need more than just a four-year bachelor's degree from college.
You do now. At the time I attended, it only required a bachelor's degree. Then they went to a five-year program. Now it's expanded into like a seven-year program. It includes your internship, so you actually come out as a doctor of pharmacy now. There are other branches you can take. You can still get a bachelor's degree in pharmacy if you want to go into the manufacturing field or something like that.
I think a lot of people, when they think of a pharmacist, they think of somebody standing behind the counter at a retail pharmacy, and they think all that person does is counts pills and put them in a bottle. That obviously isn't correct. Can you describe what some of the various possible positions are and what kind of responsibilities various types of pharmacists would have?
Oh, yes. Actually, the pharmacist nowadays does very little of the counting pills. That's done by pharmacy technicians, which is a growing field in pharmacy now, too. I think that a number of associate degree programs for pharmacy technicians. So they are the ones that usually do the counting of the pills and so forth. Pharmacists, more or less consulting, they have to oversee everything the technician does, of course. And the pharmacist has to look, you know, for interactions with other drugs or be aware of other problems the patient might have, and must assure the patient that they know how to take the medication and any questions the patient has and so forth. And it's continuous study. You never quit studying. If you once you get that degree, don't think you're done studying.
So you were working as a pharmacist, even though you didn't have perfect vision, but eventually your vision degraded even more while you were working.
Yes. When I was practicing the pharmacy, I still start with having more problems with my eyes. I went through several more operations on my good eye, and I got to one point in late in the 1970s where I was losing vision enough, so I kind of had to start reading the prescriptions with a magnifying glass. And I knew that didn't look very good to my patients or customers. By that time, I built up the business enough so I could hire another pharmacist. But I thought, I'm going to have to start thinking about other options.
So what did you do from there?
I was quite active in the community where I worked, and I was elected to the hospital board, which I served on for a number of years. The administrator at that time at the hospital was decided to take another job and left the hospital without an administrator, and I said, oh, I can try that. And the board appointed me as the CEO of a little, at that time was a 35-bed hospital. While I was on that job, we expanded it to a 42-bed hospital. I actually sold the pharmacy to some people who are non-pharmacists, but they kept on the pharmacists that I'd hired, and they owned the pharmacy for 4 of the years that I was hospital administrator.
Hospital administration is a very different job from being a retail pharmacist. Did you need extra training in order to do that?
Yes, absolutely. So I signed up for an independent study program at the University of Minnesota, three-year program that I went through, and I used all my vacations and weekends and late nights and early mornings studying. I finally got a certificate in hospital and healthcare administration from the University of Minnesota.
As your vision progressively failed, what kind of assistive aids did you wind up using?
One of the things that helped me to get through the education program that came out at that time was the CCTV. And thank goodness, with the help of the CCTV and my wife doing a lot of reading to me, I was able to get through that program just fine.
So just for people who may not know, a CCTV is a closed circuit TV system that enlarges text on a screen so one can see it with limited vision.
That's correct, yes. And thank goodness for that. I still use them today. I can still see enough to use CCTV. And I use a computer screen now with the Zoom Text program, if you're familiar with Zoom Text.
Which again magnifies text on the screen from your computer.
Yes.
You said you were CEO of the hospital in the past tense. What did you do after that?
I then decided that I wanted some more options. I like to be more independent, and I quit the hospital job and used 1 year to finish my thesis for the degree from Minnesota. And then I talked the people I had sold the drugstore to sell it back to me. I bought it back and decided that now with my experience at the hospital and my new education at Minnesota that I would approach. I like pharmacy better, but I would approach it from a different angle. So I bought the store back. I hired every pharmacist I could get my hands on. It's not that easy up in northern Wisconsin, but I did hire two or three other pharmacists over the period. The first thing we did was change the pharmacy system in the hospital. At first, I loaned the pharmacy to the hospital, and then we set up a pharmacy over there, and I actually set up an in-house pharmacy in the hospital. Previously, we were doing all the hospital pharmacy from our pharmacy downtown.
You got through a lot of your studies and pharmacy tasks by using a magnifying glass because you had some limited vision. But I would guess these days a lot of that relies on the use of a computer, which computers are very accessible for visually impaired people these days between large print and screen readers. Is that true that a lot of one's work might center around working a computer?
Yes, absolutely. Computers were just coming into pharmacy when I bought the pharmacy back, and I eventually got a computer. And then I was able to actually do a lot of the pharmacy work. While I had other pharmacists working out front, I was using the computer in the back, and I was actually filling prescriptions for nursing homes and things. That was the other thing, that when I hired these pharmacists, I had to find ways to put them to work. We took on a couple of nursing homes, and with the computers, we really expanded business. My first year in owning a pharmacy, we did $49,000 worth of business for a year. When I finally left and sold out pharmacy, we were doing $2.5 million in business.
Wow.
That's impressive.
So you mentioned that you worked on the retail side and also as a hospital pharmacist and also as an institutional pharmacist providing pharmaceuticals to a nursing home. How would those positions differ in terms of what kind of things the pharmacist would do?
When you talk about nursing homes, a lot of it is just consulting. You know, you had your monthly pharmacy and therapeutics meetings with the doctors and the people, the administrators of the and nurses of the nursing homes. And we also had to do that with the hospital as well. So in addition to dispensing and that kind of work, a lot of it was consulting. And it became more and more involved at consulting the doctors. The doctors would call you and ask you for information or suggestions on medication regimens for their patients. So it became more and more involved with patient care. You've got to keep studying. Well, I actually ended up as what they call a clinical pharmacist, where I was more involved with watching for interactions between drugs and food and whatever patients' needs were. So there's more and more consulting and more working directly with physicians and other practitioners in providing a regimen of treatment for the patient.
So you obviously did all of these tasks with no vision in one eye and limited vision in the other eye.
That's correct.
Do you see any reason why somebody with no vision, you know, or somebody whose vision was sufficiently limited that the magnification wouldn't work and they'd have to work with a screen reader or speech output, do you see any reason why someone with that little vision could not do any of those jobs?
No, you have to look at options. As I said, consultant or someone with actually no vision, with a screen reader and so forth, can work as a consultant in many ways. When I was doing my internship at the University Hospital, one of my favorite jobs there was to sit by the phone and just, you know, with all my reference material around me, and answer questions that were called in by doctors or nurses in the hospital. So I don't see why a person with very little vision could not do that.
So I guess, as we mentioned to you before the interview, what prompted the idea for this show was the fact that we have a listener forum where people can discuss topics they've heard on the show. And this topic came up about being a blind pharmacist. And there were a lot of very diverse opinions, from "I don't want a pharmacist handling me because I don't want them counting out pills," to "Oh, by the way, there are lots of other jobs pharmacists can do and blind people can overcome anything." But it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, people may think of pharmacy as being kind of limited to counting out pills, but there are many different aspects of the job and many different job functions that are involved in pharmacy, and some of them may be amenable to people with limited vision and some of them not.
Well, yes. Also, don't forget the manufacturing field of pharmacy. There would be a lot of, I would think, opportunities there for people who were limited vision, and also in pharmacy administration. That's what helped me with that other degree, and the administrative side of it, was able to make decisions.
Are there other specific pharmaceutical positions that you think would be appropriate for a blind person?
You know, along with the computers came more competition into the pharmacy field as well. Those that had the computer skills, a lot of them started what they call pharmacy benefit managers. What they did, they had the computers, they had the data storage, they would negotiate with insurance companies to hire them to go out and negotiate with various manufacturers or school groups and sell them a program, and then go to the pharmacy and say, "Well, we've got all these people, and if you want to participate, you have to fill your prescriptions at a lower price in order to have all the people in that particular factory."
So it sounds like some of the keys to your success as a pharmacist were, you know, first getting the types of training and advanced training that you needed to do the more kind of leadership jobs, and then also using some of the adaptive equipment like CCTVs, computers, et cetera, to do some of your job. And then also just choosing the right job, because there are many flavors and kinds of pharmacists that one might be, many roles to be filled.
That's so true, yes.
And there shouldn't be really any limitations then for someone who is visually impaired if they just get the proper background and choose the right kind of pharmacist to be.
There are enough options out there, but you just got to pick and choose the right one that you have the skills for and have the ambition to carry it out, because I think there's a lot of opportunities in pharmacy for that.
Now for this week's final item, how to contact Arnold, and also what else he's been doing using his pharmaceutical training.
Is there anything we missed that you wanted to say?
I'd like to add that I finally got the opportunity. I sold out my business to my employees, and for the last 14 years, I became involved with the Wisconsin Council of the Blind. I've served on their board for 14 years, And the last 10 of those, I was the treasurer for the organization. And while with the Wisconsin Council of the Blind, I did a lot of consultant work. I put on workshops for them on diabetes education, on older blind vision problems, and things like that. I just retired from the board of the Wisconsin Council of the Blind a year ago last January, but I still serve as a consultant on their financial committee.
Well, you keep pretty busy, it sounds like.
Yes.
So if people would like to contact you to share their experiences and get some advice from you, would they be able to contact you somehow?
Oh, I'd appreciate it if they would, yes. I have a land phone number, which is 608-318-1889. And I have a cell phone number, which is area 608-333-7654.
And your email address?
My email address is alnmikeandnancy@live.com.
And as usual, we'll have links to all of that contact information in our show notes, along with links to several organizations for pharmacists and the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. And we'll also have instructions on how to subscribe to our discussion list if you'd like to discuss some of the topics we talked about in this show. Last time, that was quite a hot discussion going on about some of these issues, so you might want to join in. Just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net and look for those show notes for this episode.
That's it for show number 1532. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about technology for people with low vision. We'll be speaking with Jen Moore, the regional sales representative for Upstate New York for CTEC. We'll be discussing all sorts of different products that are available, including some of the ones that Arnold talked about using, like CCTVs. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.